Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. It's June 2020, a month that will live in infamy.
Where does this pandemic stand in the United States?
Divisions abound between the federal government and a number of states over the nation's response to the U.S.'s coronavirus outbreak.
COVID-19 continues its relentless crawl.
We are still very much under threat from the coronavirus.
The Black Lives Matter movement has sparked a reckoning about racial and social injustice that has swept the world. And it is the month of Pride, the LGBTQ community's annual celebration, sparked by the 1969 Stonewall Rebellion in New York City, when gay people fought back against a violent police raid on a gay bar in Greenwich Village, the tipping point for the gay liberation movement in the United States. June is a month of flowers. Activism, protest, resilience. Gert McMullen was one of the first San Franciscans to put a stitch on the AIDS quilt in the 1980s, the quilt that began with one memorial square in honor of a man who had died of AIDS and that now holds some 95,000 names. Gert never planned it this way, but over the decades, she has become the keeper of the quilt. She's repaired it, tended it, traveled with it, and conserved it for some 33 years now. Gert knows the power of sewing. When COVID-19 hit, Gert McMullen was one of the first Bay Area citizens to begin sewing masks, PPE for nurses and health workers who were lacking proper protection. Masks she makes from fabric left over from the making of the AIDS quilt. Today, the Kitchen Sisters present 95,000 names, Gert McMullen, sewing the front line.
This is the sewing area.
It's my area. They call Gert Land. If you know me, I mean, it screams Gert.
I used to work in the theater, so I've got a lot of theatrical type stuff. That's a Foxy Lady mannequin. I'd dress them up and stuff. Disco balls. There's ashes in that big one there. A friend of mine who died, and we had a little party for him. This is Connie. This is a sewing machine that's done the quilt since day one. Cleve and I call this our graveyard because they're the sewing machines that sewed the quilt. I probably have about 50 of them. These are my favorite. They're kind of like old Chevys. My name is Gert McMullen. We are at the warehouse and sewing area for the NAMES Project AIDS Memorial Quilt, right across from the Oakland Airport. It's been here since January. My official title is Quilt Conservator, but I just call myself a sewer. But it was all Cleve Jones' idea. He doesn't sew, but he got us all to sew. He saved my life, his idea.
My name is Cleve Jones. I'm a San Franciscan. I've been an activist for many years, organizing gay and lesbian rights. the quilt. It was my idea, but Gert is the mother of the quilt.
So this is a quilt. It starts way down that way. The number one is up there, and then it starts going around this way. It's all numerical. It's kind of like a library. From number one all the way up to now, we have 5,992 12 by 12 times 8. So it's about 48,000 panels. It weighs about 60 tons. It would take up the whole National Mall and the whole ellipse and go out to the street. There's about 95,000 names. These are my boys. That's what I call them, my boys. We don't have everything all together yet. We were actually really lucky to get all the quilt up on the shelves. We were really lucky. We got it here just in time, because as soon as we got here, then COVID-19 hit.
My name is John Cunningham, executive director of the National AIDS Memorial. After we went into isolation and into shelter at home, I received a call that our board member, Tom Jensen, had been diagnosed COVID positive. Gert was in tears, and yeah, Gert has done a lot of the sewing, but back in the day, in the darkest days of the epidemic, Gert also spent a lot of time in the wards at SF General, where the first nurses were treating AIDS patients, the first AIDS wards. Those boys were alone because their parents had abandoned them oftentimes, their communities had abandoned them. Gert spent time in there with not only friends, but strangers.
I just started to freak out because we couldn't go visit him. And I'm not used to that. This disease is so different because with AIDS, we could take it out to the streets. You know, Cleveland with his bullhorn, you know, and we could do something. Here we have to hide away. The government's not doing enough, and we can't even go out and tell them they're not doing enough. I heard something about nurses not getting the right equipment, and I thought, oh my God, you know, because the nurses were so great with AIDS, risking their lives. Maybe there's something I can do.
She called me in the morning and she said, there aren't masks. I can sew.
We have a lot of fabric here that has been donated throughout the years to make panels from the AIDS Memorial quilt. And I started making masks. My mother used to make all kinds of clothes for me. She died when I was 9 and left 6 of us. So I took her sewing machine. I taught myself how to sew. My given name is Cindy McMullen, but I changed it to Gert in the mid-80s when the AIDS crisis was really getting bad. My friends were the first to die. I was starting to lose my mind. Nobody would let me talk about people who had died, and I was really losing it. I was tired of being Cindy. Cindy hurt too much. And so I made up 5 personas: Lorelai, Mitzi, Olivia, Kit, and Gert. I had business cards for all of them, too, at Macy's. I used to sell cologne there. And I would pretend I was them. An old bitter Gert kind of stuck. Gert just came forth to protect little Cindy Ann.
We were so overwhelmed by grief, and when there's too much grief, we become paralyzed. And I could see it happening. I could see it happening to me. My friends died, I made new friends, they died, I made new friends, they died. It just went on and on and on, year after year after year. The media was reducing it to statistics, and I wanted to condemn the government. I wanted something to lay out at the front of the White House and the Congress to say, look, you failed.
If this were a man and a woman holding hands, it would be considered perfectly natural. But these are men, and for men in this society to hold hands in public is at least shameful and more often offensive. They are homosexuals.
For my generation, there was no information that there were even other people like us. I thought I was the only one in the whole world. I was one of those kids who was planning on committing suicide, pilfering medications from my parents, getting ready to overdose. And then I read in Life magazine, the year in review, 1971, about the Stonewall Rebellion and the gay liberation movement. The movement saved my life. As soon as I graduated from high school, I got the hell out, hitchhiked to San Francisco, and it was a time of migration. The people we now call LGBTQ kids were leaving their hometowns and going to the big cities. The word was out that this culture was exploding. Gayborhoods emerging and political movement, an incredible club scene.
I moved to San Francisco in the early 80s.
Gert was a club kid, dancer.
I worked at Macy's cologne and cosmetics and theater. You couldn't get hanging around more gay men than that.
It was a very romantic, dramatic time. I've met some of the great pioneers of what we now call the LGBTQ community. And of course, I met Harvey Milk. He was always hanging out, registering voters, passing out flyers on the corner of Castro and 18th in San Francisco. Took me under his wing and got me to cut my hair and stop selling pot and go to school. Probably the first adult to tell me that I had value just as I was, essentially bribed me with an internship. He said that he was going to get elected and I could go and work for him for credits.
Cleve was Harvey Milk's right-hand man. He was his wingman. As a gay man, I mean, Harvey Milk was the one who broke through.
We'll be right back. This episode of The Kitchen Sisters Present is supported by Sakara, a nutrition company that focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat. Their organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with plant-based ingredients designed to help boost energy and improve digestion. The menu of creative, chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners changes weekly, and it's delivered fresh anywhere in the U.S. Sakara also has daily supplements and herbal teas. You can help ensure you're getting the plant nutrition you need with the foundation, Sakara's curated vitamin packs. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/kitchensisters or enter code kitchensisters at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/kitchensisters to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/kitchensisters.
First gay supervisor elected in San Francisco. His name is Harvey Milk. First of all, congratulations, and I've never seen anything like this, Harvey.
Oh, it's all over the city tonight.
Does that mean, as many straights are concerned, maybe the gays are taking over San Francisco? Are you going to be a supervisor for all the people?
I have to be. That's what I was elected for. I have to be there too.
He was like this kind of odd Jewish guy from New York who came to San Francisco and just won the heart of that city. To watch him at the bus stops and the senior centers and the Union Hall, and he'd just walk up and he'd say, "Hi, I'm Harvey Milk, what's your name?" And he would find that common ground and he would build on that.
If I'm fighting for the rights of gay people, and I am, then I must fight for the rights of all people, you know, all the minorities, the senior citizens, the handicapped, the disenfranchised people, or I'm a hypocrite.
Another tragedy is upon us.
November 27th, 1978, that horrible day in City Hall.
The mayor of San Francisco was shot dead in his office in City Hall this morning.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
The... suspect is Supervisor Van White.
This is the body of Supervisor Harvey Milk as it was taken from City Hall.
Dan White, a one-time city supervisor who had resigned and wanted Moscone to reappoint him.
At 11 a.m., he went to City Hall, to the office of the mayor, and shot and killed him.
White ran down the hall and fired three shots at Milk, killing him. Milk had opposed the reappointment of White.
I had been in his office that morning, and I'd left a file and went back to get it. And when I got back, I found his body, and it was just so horrifying. And I thought, it's just over, you know, it's over. And then the sun went down, and the people began to gather at the corner of Castro and Market, hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands, that river of candlelight down Castro Street to Civic Center Plaza. And I knew it was not over. It was just beginning.
I can remember after Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone had been killed and Cleve stood on the steps of City Hall, he said, "We, the gay community, are a loving and gentle people. We will get through this, but we will also rise up."
So that winter, as Dan White's trial went on, it got very, very grim. Dan White basically got slapped on the wrist with a manslaughter conviction. And that night, May 21st, there was the most violent uprising in the history of the LGBT movement, the White Night Riot. enormous property damage was done. Police cars were burned, and the city was paralyzed. It was only a couple years later that first Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report out of the Centers for Disease Control about HIV/AIDS.
My friends were the first to die before they even had the word grid. And then when it just started going, and all my friends, just everybody I knew was sick or dying, and nobody wanted to talk about it.
Federal health officials consider it an epidemic, yet you rarely hear a thing about it.
It's a disease first detected in the gay community.
San Francisco and Los Angeles.
No one knows why.
Heavy drug users.
Experts are now calling.
There is almost no money being spent so far.
One New York group is raising a few $1,000s for research by selling T-shirts.
In 1985, in the Castro, just the Castro neighborhood, 10 blocks, 1,000 people had died. Almost everyone was caring for someone.
Mike Smith, co-founder of the NAMES Project Foundation, at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, 2012.
Cleve Jones, who organizes the Candlelight March every year for George Moscone and Harvey Milk, was fed up with people not being public, staying in the shadows with so much stigma and phobia. And so he asked people who were going to march in the Candlelight March to make a simple sign with the name of someone they knew.
I was just so struck by that number, 1,000. And I remember standing at the corner of Castro and Market, beautiful Victorian homes and cafes and restaurants and clubs. You hear music and smell food and coffee and hear laughter. And you have no idea that you're standing at the epicenter of this really horrendous tragedy that at that time was rapidly spreading. I just got so frustrated by the lack of evidence. I thought to myself, you know, if we could knock down these buildings, if this was a meadow with 1,000 corpses rotting in the sun, you know, then people would look at it. And if they were human beings, they would be compelled to respond. But there was no response. Reagan was president and he wouldn't even talk about it. That night, I had Harvey Milk's old bullhorn and I got stacks of poster board. And I asked everybody to write the name of someone they knew who had been killed by the new disease. At first, people were ashamed to do it, but finally began writing their first and last names. We carried these placards to San Francisco City Hall, down to UN Plaza. We hidden ladders in the shrubbery nearby, climbed up the front gray stone facade of this building and taped the names to the wall. There were thousands of people. It was gentle rain, people reading these names on this patchwork of placards up on that wall, and I thought to myself, it looks like some kind of quilt. I thought of my grandma, my great-grandma, back in Bee Ridge, Indiana, and the quilts they'd made. Warm and comforting and middle American traditional family values. And I thought, this is the symbol we should take.
The thought of a quilt kind of summed up everything that was wrong in how the country was responding. When you hear the word quilt, you think of your grandmother taking care of you when you're sick. That was so far from the way our culture and our society was responding to people with AIDS, who were being left to die in hospital corridors, who were being written off by their families and thrown out of their apartments. Cleve had come to me and explained this idea for a quilt, and I did think it was a little bit crazy. But I said I would help. We put up some signs around the Castro that said volunteers needed, come to a meeting. And Gert showed up with some friends and two panels that she'd already made.
What made me come into it is that all my friends were dying and I was losing my mind. And I needed something to do. I always made presents for my friends, so it was another way of kind of making presents for them. Mike Smith ran the meeting and there were six people that showed up. Cleve didn't even go to the first meeting because he said he knew it was going to be a failure. Wrote my address on my first two panels because I thought, oh, you know, these queens, I don't know what they'll do with these panels. Nancy thought we were out of our mind. She's like, well, nobody's going to do that. What are you, crazy?
Let me just tell you this. A long time ago, 1987, Cleve Jones comes to my home. We want to take some pictures to announce the NAMES Project.
Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, at the Library of Congress, November 20th, 2019.
Now I am just newly elected, a member of Congress, and I say to Cleve, a quilt? Nobody sews. I said, I have 5 children. I went to school in a convent. I know how to sew. I know how to darn. I don't sew. So if I don't sew, with a mother of 5, a sewing machine, and all of that knowledge, nobody sews. So I said, Cleve, I just don't know about this project. Can we do something else? And he said, no, this is it. We're sticking with this.
Every day, these brown paper packages would arrive at our workshop at 2362 Market Street. And we would open them up. And I remember the first one that came in for a baby that had died of AIDS, and it had her stuffed animals. I remember one day Gert said, you better come look at this. That was the first panel that came in with the ashes of the person that was being remembered.
These are the very first ones. They used to be a lot thinner. They're kind of like your old pajamas that you don't want to throw away. They're your real favorite ones that don't fold very well, and they always kind of mess up the shelf, and that's what these are like. I call them the old soldiers. They're just beaten up a bit.
We're looking here at the Marvin Feldman, which was the very first panel ever made. That was Cleve's friend. The first panels were done on sheets that were done with spray paint.
The first panels that I made were really ugly. I didn't know how to sew. I made the first one for my dear Marvin Feldman. When I was done with it, I was kind of horrified because Marvin was very picky, and he would have wanted something to be in the Museum of Modern Art or at least Barney's front window. Marvin Feldman was one of the great loves of my life. We had jobs selling Time Life books over the telephone. He was just the best friend you could hope for. And as he was dying, he went home to Providence, and I went back to be with him. And his father had served in World War II and liberated one of the death camps. Everything about Marvin was wrapped up in the fact that as a very young child, he understood that he was a homosexual and a Jew, part of two categories that had been subjected to genocide. He feared that it could be repeated. My unartistic attempt to communicate that was, and I spray painted some pink triangles, the symbol attached to homosexuals in the death camps. I had some of them overlap in some blue triangles to form Stars of David. I see it every now and then, and I think, oh God, Cleve. But his mother approves.
As soon as I heard about the Names Project, I called up to Cleve in San Francisco and told him I'd very much like to get involved and how could I help him best.
Warren Caton.
And he said, we need a couple panels that are spectacular. Can you help us? I said, yeah. And I had chosen Liberace and Rock Hudson. Rock Hudson especially because he had so much to do with media exposure, getting people aware of what had happened with AIDS. And actually Liberace, because there was a lot of denial and still is about that, and I thought it was important he still be commemorated despite the denial. I wrote back on the back of Liberace's, and now heaven has more sparkle.
Some of the quilts were angry. Some of the quilts assailed Reagan. Roy Cohn, the evil fascist closet case that was part of the whole witch hunt against homosexuals, and he, who died of AIDS, who's the subject of Angels in America. This young man created a panel for him, and it said bully, coward, victim.
I was angry. I wanted people to know that I loved this person and that they had died a horrible death. Nobody seemed to care.
Cleve Jones wanted to bring it to Washington. It was really an activist move. We were pissed and we were going to throw our dead down in front of the White House. The panels are made 3 foot by 6 foot because that's the size of a girl.
Cleve says, we want to bring the quilt, now it's almost 2,000 panels, to Washington, D.C. Now I'm in Washington, and so he comes to me and he says, we want to display it on the Mall. We're getting some resistance. So I said, well, that can't be, right? So I go to see the National Park Service. They said, oh yeah, we can give you a corner, a little space on a corner someplace. I said, you're not hearing this. And I, earlier than maybe I should have, spoke for all of the Democrats in Congress. So they said, well, we can't do it because you're going to kill the grass. So we can handle that. We aren't going to kill the grass. You're going to have to get the quilt lifted up every 20 minutes. And I said, well, you understand, we have volunteers from all over the country. That's the easiest thing in the world. We will lift up the quilt every 20 minutes because People in America are sewing their hearts out. They're just sewing. Everybody loves to sew. This is to the heart of who we are. Don't you understand what sewing means to us?
Today, a quilt made by Americans across the country was unfurled. Each of the 2,000 panels bears the name of an AIDS victim.
Rico Draper, Jim Bishop, Timothy LaPree, Al Alford, Ed Bonehead, Keith Lester, Carol McKinley.
Speaker after speaker called for more money and more research.
We must end the AIDS virus, the AIDS crisis, and stop death and give life a chance.
Randy Pruitt, John Davis, Johnny Weaver, Dong Laundry, Norman Hall, Catherine Wheeler.
What made me want to come out? I'm sick of seeing my friends die. It's a ridiculous idea that we can't get any more federal money. I want him to do something. I want someone to do something. And it's not on the American people, because the American people have done this. You know, this is the government we're talking to.
Whoopi Goldberg at the first display of the AIDS quilt on the Mall in Washington, D.C., 1988.
I felt like this was the best way to say goodbye to people instead of cold hard cement. I thought this was a beautiful way, and I was just tired. You know, there's a lot of people I knew. I was just tired.
In 1999, we were over on Townsend Street near where the ballpark was going into. And, you know, when the dot-com thing came through and all the rents skyrocketed, and they wanted all that land. I mean, we were going under, frankly. I mean, monetarily, we were going under.
Commercial real estate was going through the roof in San Francisco, so it made sense to go to Atlanta, where there was less expensive office space, warehouse space.
The quilt moved to Atlanta and was there for 19 years. I followed it. I went to Atlanta. These are my boys. I had no choice. It wasn't a choice. I was just going to go with it, whether they wanted me to or not.
This is a woman who would sew all day, sew all night, and then she would climb up into the shelves with the fabric and fall asleep, and then get up and make coffee and start sewing again. It is Gert who has handled every single panel. It is Gert who decided which ones went in which square. It's Gert who has repaired them. It is Gert who has, you know, saved all of the archive. That's another thing. And I used to tell her, why are you saving all this stuff? Letters, photographs, military medals, ashes, posters. Gert saved all of this.
I've been bitched at for many years. Why do you keep all this stuff? A lot of little teddy bears or little stuffed animals and stuff, they've fallen off the quilt and we don't know where they belong. They got so mad at me for keeping so many boxes of stuff that I finally brought it home, and then I had my own storage unit. I said, I'm not throwing it out. We used to have 20 huge fireproof file cabinets full of documentation that accompanied all of these panels. I would read them, file it, cross-reference it with the panel, and I know that somebody's going to want it.
And that archive has now been transferred to the custody of the Library of Congress.
Librarian of Congress, Dr. Carla Hayden.
Good morning.
We are honored to announce that the National AIDS Memorial will become the new caretaker of the AIDS Memorial Quilt. And as part of the transition, the Library of Congress's American Folklife Center will become the new home for the National AIDS Memorial Quilt Archive Collection. It will help humanize and bring to mind the scale of the AIDS pandemic through the words and voices from the people we've lost and the families they've touched. This includes our colleagues here at the Library of Congress who passed away from AIDS and who are remembered on the library panel of the quilt. A small group of library staff members got together in 1992 to stitch together this panel. They learned how to sew and use a sewing machine during their lunch breaks and staying late after work. And 27 years later, 8 of them still work here at the library and are here this morning.
This quilt
is the family heirloom for the countless men and women who lost their lives and to those who love and remember them.
John Lewis, U.S. Representative from Georgia.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. often spoke of the beloved community, a society at peace with itself and its neighbors that recognize the dignity and the worth of every human being. From the earliest days of the AIDS crisis, this community provided for each other what society denied them: brotherhood, sisterhood, human decency, and unconditional love.
The quilt came back to San Francisco in December. So Gert comes back, trucks pulling up.
It took 6 52-foot semis to get it here.
55 miles long, unfurled all at once. Has that ever happened?
Oh, yes. Last time that happened was in 1996 here at the mall. And we took up, oh, my God, all of the mall, all the way down and into the trees.
We were going to have a big display, welcome home display at Golden Gate Park. Then COVID-19 hit. I started making masks that you could put an N95 into so that it would make their masks reusable.
See, these, they have a pocket.
But I said, remember when we used to say that, God, if it was straight people, they would have done something about this AIDS thing? We were wrong. They still don't do anything. And I said, we're going to have to do it just like we did with AIDS. I only wanted to use that fabric from the quilt. It made 1,300 that helps the homeless. A nurse contacted me from St. Mary's. Well, now I've been giving them, you know, 20, 50. Every few weeks I give them a bunch. I've been giving to UCSF. The nurses there, I gave them like 80 the other day. And I try to make some fun ones, a little mustache, you know. Then they love them because they're from the quilt. It's connected to another epidemic that was meant to help people heal. The fabric had kind of healed a lot of other people. Hopefully, maybe you can do it again.
95,000 Names, Gert McMullen's Sewing the Frontline, was produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson, in collaboration with Nathan Dalton, and mixed by Jim McKee. Special thanks to Gert McMullen, John Cunningham, Kevin Herglotz, Mike Smith, and to Cleve Jones, whose new book, When We Rise, My Life in the Movement, is out now and is one hell of a read. Thanks also to Peter Hartlob, whose story about Gert in the San Francisco Chronicle inspired us to go see her at the Quilt's new headquarters near the Oakland Airport. We'd also like to thank the Library of Congress, the National AIDS Memorial, and the NAMES Project Foundation. Funding for The Keepers comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities and listener contributions to the Kitchen Sisters Productions. The Kitchen Sisters Present is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, story-driven, mind-expanding podcasts that illuminate your world. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.